So this morning, I'd like to start with a little poem by Thich Nhat Hanh entitled, Taking the First Steps of the Day. Walking on the earth, it is a miracle. Each mindful step reveals the wondrous Dharmakaya. That's it. End of talk. What can I add to that? Well, I can tell you what Dharmakaya means. Dharmakaya means timeless interconnectedness. Timeless interconnectedness. Undividedness. So that's the miracle, is that we have the potential at any moment just to have our first breath. Undivided. That's the miracle. Take the first step, even if it's the 154th step, undivided. And that's not so easy for us as human beings. And we live in a very multitasking society, getting more and more multi all the time. I'm hardly keeping up with the different text messaging sorts of phenomena. Although my kids and soon my grandkids are trying to educate me. And multitasking is great, but can you multitask and be undivided? Is it possible? It might be possible, but first, let's try to just do one thing. And if we can do one thing undividedly, maybe we can do two things and three things and four things. And then we can appreciate the miracle that Thich Nhat Hanh's talking about. It's just being. So undividedness, and we have a term in English, especially in psychology, individuation. On one hand, there's undividedness. On the other hand, there's individuation. And my grandsons now are working on individuation. They're working on developing themselves, right? Stories. And they tell them stories all the time. I Skype with my grandson. He wants more stories. More stories. And he incorporates those. He's dividing. He's developing a little self with a past and a future. Connections to some things and things he knows he should stay away from because they'll get him in trouble. So that individuation process is important for everybody. Especially in the first 10 or 20 years of life. And my grandson right now, what he wants is stories about people having accidents and dying. Over and over and over. That's what he wants. But not him. Other people. Other people. People he doesn't know. So that's part of his individuation process, because he doesn't get what this is all about, this dying thing. Not that anybody ever does, but he's trying to make sense of it. We've given up a long time ago, but he's trying to make sense of it. He's individuating. He's creating the story of his life. He's the star, and everybody else is the supporting players. And that's cool. That's cool. But you got to pay attention to the supporting players too, Ethan. Says mama and papa and grandpa and grandma. And so we have individuating and we have undividedness. And you could say that for our whole lives, we are working on individuating. Parts of ourselves that probably didn't get completed in adolescence or our childhood. And for some of us, we're working on more on those individuation things, and others not so much. And that's all cool stuff, but that's not what meditation is about. Meditation is undividedness. And undividedness and individuation are great complementary principles. So you shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you do, you'll be in trouble if you throw individuation out. Because the story you tell yourself, the song you sing to yourself about who you are and about your world, is an important song. But really, they're all just the same song, because we're undivided. So really, whatever you sing, it's undivided. So both, right? Both. So some of you were sitting here during this last sitting, and trying to focus on just being with your breath, trying to focus on just being. And likely, some of you were overdoing the individuation when you were supposed to be working on the undividing. Because this is almost an addiction that human beings have, getting the individuation right. And there's a time and a place for individuation, but sitting in zazen is not the time and the place for it. Then you think you're bad. Oh, I'm bad. I'm not good enough. I'm not undivided enough. And that's your part of your individuation, to be more undivided. It gets kind of complicated. And you think, oh, I should just do Tai Chi. You know, at least with Tai Chi, I can relax and flow, and wow, and I get to be, et cetera, et cetera. Because then sitting is kind of bare. More than kind of bare. So Shakespeare said, comparisons are odious. Well, that's that from the point of each breath being a miracle, comparisons are odious. From the point of each step, fully engaging in it, and fully being present with it, and feeling the foot rising up, being in the air and going down, comparisons are odious. Because you'll never do it right if you compare it with something else. But on the other hand, we need to compare. That's part of the individuation process. So, I was going to lead a retreat that starts tomorrow at Hokyoji. Tuesday evening at Hokyoji, but I got ill, so I'm not able to lead it. And I was going to talk about the Shin Ming, which is by the third ancestor. One of my favorite prose poems from the Chinese Zen masters. And I never got past looking at the title because I got ill. So I'll talk a little bit about the title. The title, Shin Ming. So the title, Shin. Oh, so it's got the title Shin is faith or trust, the first Shin. The second Shin is heart or mind, and the Ming is verses. So it's verses about what? Trust in heart, faith in mind. Trust in mind, faith in heart, faith heart, trust mind. 15 different translations I looked at in preparation for my preparation for this talk. That's as far as I got. And I had to go to bed. 15. But the same, and it's interesting, half of them have the in, and half of them don't have the in, the preposition. And you know why? Because there aren't prepositions in Chinese. They're just the characters. And you assume that either there is a preposition or there isn't. So the way I like to think about this is the second shin is heart-mind. Half the translations are heart, half the translations are mind. The Heart Sutra, it's the same shin as in the Heart Sutra. It's heart-mind. There's no division. It's undivided. When the mind is still, is there any division between the heart and the mind? Is there any division? When the heart is really open, completely open, is there any division between the heart and your thinking? I don't think so. So heart-mind. And we could say that Shin Shin Ming is about the transformation from trust in heart-mind to trusting heart-mind. From trust in heart-mind to trusting heart-mind. So we can't really practice if we don't have some trust that through our zazen, through our sitting, that we will manifest, we will discover and manifest timeless interconnection. We have to have some trust. If we don't, we all leave. And of course, I've seen a lot of people come and go over these years, but a lot of people stay too. Those people who stay are either just stupid. Well, maybe they are. Suzuki Roshi said, I want the stupid students to stay. You know why? Because comparisons are odious. The stupid students just did it over and over and over again. Anyway, we have some trust that if we do this process, at some points, we'll experience just this breath as a miracle. Just this sitting upright as a miracle. With no vision. Just the vision that is this vision, right? That's plenty. So the Shin Shin Ming starts, the great way is not difficult. Just don't pick and choose. If you let go of likes and dislikes, everything is clear like space. Make the slightest distinction, and heaven and earth are set apart. If you wish to see the truth, cease to cherish opinions. Not cease to have opinions. Part of the individuation process is developing opinions. It's thinking clearly how you feel about things, politically, socially, interpersonally. But if you cherish them, you're starting to get yourself into trouble in terms of overlooking undividedness, overlooking timeless interconnectedness. And the Shin Shin Ming ends, since this is as far as I got, with trust and heart-mind are not two. Not two is trusting heart-mind. Words and speech don't get it. Can't now, never would, won't ever. That's my favorite translation. I didn't do that translation, but it's my favorite of the 15 because I like the colloquial, and I also like that it has a rhythm to it. What? Trust and heart-mind are not two. Not two is trusting heart-mind. Words and speech don't get it. Can't now, never could, won't ever. So where does that leave us? Well, it leaves us with our practice, with our Zen practice, with our meditation practice. Our meditation practice is not about having nice feelings, not about becoming calm or becoming spiritual. What is becoming spiritual? You become a Buddhist or a Catholic or something or other and you want to be spiritual. What is that? What's that all about? I think that's about individuation. That's cool. If you want to individuate as a spiritual person, that's cool. But undividedness doesn't know anything about spiritual or material. It's just what is, right? This is what Suzuki Roshi calls things as it is. And when we were having a practice period a couple of years ago, or maybe 3 years ago, I lost track, I was talking about Suzuki Roshi's grammatical mistake. And Andrea pointed out to me that it was not necessarily a grammatical mistake. And since then, I realized it's not a grammatical mistake. He did it on purpose. Things, everything different, everything unique, and yet as it is. It's always as it is. It's always, can I rest in this as it is? Can I rest in this breath? That's all there is this breath. That's all there is this kind of tired body. Kind of tired body that wants to be in bed as much of the time as it can because it's still not very well. That's all there is. Can I rest in this? Can you rest in whatever is? Things as it is. That's all Zen is. Undivided. Undivided. It's possible. It's possible. If you have trust in heart-mind at some point, trusting heart-mind will become more and more a focal point. And there'll be a lot less of this I stuff going on in a dominant way. It will no longer haunt you. I guarantee that. I guarantee that. But I won't give you your money back. Because what's a guarantee worth? You know? Guarantee. It's just another word, isn't it? Just another word. So this practice is about somewhat about this practice, this sitting practice, this meditation practice, is about kind of taking the I out of it. The I demands that the sickness go away. The I demands that the bad go away. Help! 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 But what about just being with it? What about just being with it? Is there anything else? Well, sure, they're your stories. They're your individuation. But geez, don't you overdo it? A little bit? A little bit? Don't we all, a little bit, overdo it? When we have the opportunity just to drink this water? Watch someone drinking water when you're thirsty? You have that opportunity? I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. Just to be with it. Just to rest in it. And we have so much emotional investment in our individuation. In being a teacher who shows up and is able to sit up instead of lie in bed. So much investment in that, right? Well, that's okay. That's okay. Our practice is just to observe how we get invested, just to observe how we cherish those opinions without commenting, without criticizing, and just rest in that. Just rest in it. Until trusting in turns into trusting. You can't trust in anything. You can only trust. That person that you trust in is going to let you down sooner or later. He's going to piss you off sooner or later. He's going to get senile sooner or later. I guarantee it. I'll give you your money back on that one. One thing you can trust in is undividedness. Dharmakaya. Timeless interconnection. You can trust in that. That has nothing to do with religion or spirituality. But it has everything to do with religion and spirituality. Sure, why not? Why not? the Sorangama Sutra. The moon's the same old moon, the flowers are just as they are, yet now I am the thingness of things. The thingness of things. Prepositions are no prepositions anymore. The thingness of things. A question. Oh, so here's something from the Pali Canon, the Sutta Nipata. A questioner asked the Buddha, "I would like to know about the state of peace, the state of solitude, and of quiet detachment. How does a person become calm, independent, and not wanting to grasp at anything?" "A person does this," replied the Buddha, "by eradicating the delusion of I am. By being alert and attentive, he begins to let go of cravings as they arise. But whatever he begins to accomplish, he should be aware of inner pride. He must avoid thinking of himself as better than another, or worse, or equal, for that is all comparison and emphasizes the self. The person should look for peace within and not depend on it in any other place. For when a person is quiet within, the self cannot be found. There are no waves in the depths of the ocean. It is still and unbroken. It is the same with the peaceful person. He is still without any longing to grasp. He has let go of the foundation of self and no longer builds up pride and desire." In the Sutta Nipata, 150 words. So now, Basho, in 8 words, 1,000 years later, 1,000 years, let's see, Basho, the 18th or 19th century, 2,000 years later, huh? Yeah, 2,000 years later, 2,000 years later. The old pond, a frog jumps in, plop. Which is one of my favorite ones I've talked about before. It's the same. You're just saying the same thing. Aren't they saying the same thing? The old pond. Buddha says, there are no waves in the depths of the ocean. It's still unbroken. Basho says, the old pond. The old pond. A frog jumps in, plop. We jump into timelessness, the timeless interconnectedness, through embracing things as it is. That's all. We embrace things as it is. At that moment, jump into timelessness, jump into interconnectedness, with no preparation. The frog didn't have any preparation. So Sengai, who is a Zen master, took Basho's poem and he said, "The old pond." Basho jumps in, plop. And then other Zen masters riffed and raft on the old pond for a few centuries, right? Zen is nothing if not good improvisational jazz, you guys. But you've got to learn to play the instrument first. You've got to learn to play the instrument first. You have to devote yourself to the instrument if you want to play good jazz. So Basho's complimentary poem to this one is Rice Planting Songs in the Innermost Part of the Country, which I've talked about before. Rice Planting Songs in the Innermost Part of the Country. So in ancient Japan, they went far inland, very swampy. That's where people didn't go, where it was really swampy in there. And that's where they planted their rice. And sung their planting songs as they were planting. So Basho hears them, but he doesn't go in there. It's too far in, only crazy people go in. You have to have high boots. And but he hears the singing coming from the innermost part of the country. He hears it. He doesn't compare it to anything. doesn't want to be closer or nearer. He just hears it. The innermost part of the country. The heart mind. Whatever you want to call it. You don't have to call it anything. It's always here. It's always available. Sick or well. Messed up or not messed up. Mind going 1,000 miles a minute or mind completely still? Still here? How could it be different? How could it be different? The old pond. A frog jumps in. Plop. So, onomatopoeia, right? The sound of the plop and the word. Where's the division? Where's the division? So the Tang Dynasty, Zen Master, 1,000 years before Basho, 1,000 years after Buddha, Shen Yun, he was doing practice period. We're going to have practice period starting here in a couple weeks, I think. Something like that. He was doing practice period in monastic setting. We don't exactly have a monastic setting here. he was doing 100-day practice period. That's traditionally what you do, is 100 days of practicing together, of practicing this, just being with what is. We have two 50-day ones, one in the fall and one in the spring. So he was doing practice period. And practice period has always included a complementary balance of meditation and manual labor. We're a little light on the manual labor around here. But we all have busy lives, so geez, you can only do so many things. But we do put manual labor. We do it. We do it. So the complementary practice, which is practice period. And he was sweeping in the graveyard of the teacher's graveyard with absorption. He'd just come out of Zazen and he was continuing his work samadhi, really absorbed. Work samadhi can be very, very cleansing. Most of you have done it. When you really give yourself to something, it can really clear out. Sometimes even better than Zazen, because Zazen, you don't have anything to do with your work. You can, I've got the broom, you know. So he was doing this, and a little stone that he was sweeping hit a big rock and went, and Shen Yun dropped away. What does this mean, he dropped away? It means his stories dropped away. His comparison dropped away. His sense of separate self, who was trying to be a good sweeper, dropped away. Dropped away. Dropped away. And there's a miracle whenever that happens. The miracle. You experience it. But don't make something out of it when you experience it. Then you spoil it. By running and saying, oh, guess what happened to me? then you missed it again. Then again, you're falling back into your over-individuation mind. It's tricky, isn't it? Buddha supposedly spent 6 years. Half myth, three-quarters myth, spent 6 years practicing. And then during the last few days, he sat in meditation the way we sit, supposedly. He sat supposedly like this, right? Like this, this mudra. And mudra, Wikipedia defines a mudra as an energy seal. A gesture or posture that allows us to control the flow of our energy or life force, prana. So this was his seal, and this is called the ocean seal. In Sanskrit, it's, what is it? Sagara, ocean. This is Sagara Mudra. So, sealing the ocean in. The ocean, the old pond, seals right in here. And that's why Suzuki Roshi always used to say, well, don't let your thumbs go down like this. Keep it sealed. Well, I found out that if you let your thumbs go down there, it's perfectly okay, you guys. I found that out. But don't tell anyone. Anyway, that's the symbolism. That's the symbolism. And he was sitting like that, in great absorption, and he didn't hear it. He saw the morning star. He looked up and he saw it. And all of a sudden, Siddhartha, remember his name was Siddhartha. All Siddhartha's stories fell away. All of his fears fell away. All of his regrets fell away. All of his plans fell away. Undivided. Undivided. Doesn't mean you can't pick them up later. They'll pick themselves up. Don't worry. Maybe you're afraid that you... I'll tell you, they pick themselves up. That individuation, that's instinctually driven. That's Darwinian. You don't have to worry about that, you guys. A lot of people worry about it. So, finishing with a poem by Gary Snyder. Why not? Why not? So Gary Snyder, for me, being an old guy, although Gary Snyder is even quite a bit older than I am, he was the man. He was the one, the first person to practice Zen in Japan. The first person to really immerse himself, learn the language, give his life over to it. We had him here in about 82. Yeah. Do you remember that? No? I tried to get him to come when he was in town last time, but he's getting old. And he said, I'm getting old, Tim. I said, well, so am I. He lives in the foothills of the Sierra Nevadas, where he's lived for years. So, Gary Snyder. Title of the poem is The Old Pond. Blue mountain, white snow gleam. Through pine bulk and needle sprays, little hemlock half in shade, ragged, rocky skyline. Single, clear, flat, nutch hatch call, down from the tree trunks, up through time. At Five Lakes Basin's biggest little lake, after all day scrambling on the peaks, a naked bug with a white body and brown hair dives into the water. Splash! So this practice is about radically realigning ourselves to the world around us. Radically realigning ourselves. As much as possible, taking the interfering eye out of it. You have to take 83% of the eye out of it, or 86% or 88% out of it, to do this radical realignment. And for a moment, 100%. So you can experience the miracle. For a moment, 100%. And then for more moments, 100%. And for endless moments, 100%. But don't compare. It's not about right and wrong. It's about resting in this frail body, in this worn out body, in this young, youthful body. Resting. In what is. So So I'll talk a little bit more about the poem. Line by line. Okay? Blue mountain, white snow gleam. No capitals, no punctuation, right? Gleam snow, white, blue, white, mountain blue. White, blue, mountain, gleam snow. Undivided, right? Undivided. Your mind can be that still. You've all had that experience at times when your mind was that still. I know that. Can that become, can you radically realign so that becomes the norm rather than the exception? Is it possible? Is it possible? Blue mountain, white snow gleam through pine balk and needle sprays. Pine balk, sitting like a pine tree, sitting like in the Sierra Nevada. Probably up close to timberline. Those pines are still sturdy up there. It's hard up there. They just sit, right? And they sit like they have the same contours as we do when we sit, more or less. I mean, well, you know, I'm getting going over like this these days, but so are they, often. The bulk of just being. Being with whatever's present up there by timberline. Just being there. Rooted in the rocks, but finding some soil to hold on to. Through pine bulk and needle sprays. So the pine is solidly rooted, solidly there. We're solidly here. But the needles are always spraying. They're continually spraying. They're continually going. We're always losing needles. What's left? More and more needles are losing. Oh, more are coming in. But that's confusing, isn't it? Can't we just have a nice Christmas tree without losing all the needles? Get one of those plastic trees. No needles to clean up, right? Life and death. Life and death. Through pine balk and needle sprays. Little hemlock half in shade. Little hemlock half in shade. Half in shade. Always half in shade. Always half in shade. Words and speech, don't get it. Can't now. Never did. Won't ever. Always half in shade. It's this heart-mind stuff that I talk about. It's always half in shade. Religions who think they have it figured out, good luck. People who think they have it figured out, stay away from them. It's always half in shade. Do you know what I mean? Through pine balk and needle sprays, little hemlock half in shade, ragged rocky skyline. Ragged rocky skyline. Well, what would be the usual word there? What would it be instead of ragged rocky skyline? It would be jagged. But Gary is creating a little bit of a different scene here. Ragged. Falling away. Dropping away. Slip sliding away. Even what seems the most permanent, what seems the most still, the most dependable, the rocky crest, falling away, ragged, vulnerable, open, heart-mind. Single, clear, flat, nut-hatch call, down from the tree trunks, up through time, the nut-hatch. Just a tiny brown little bird, right, that you can't see and barely see. It's indecipherable. Nobody goes, when they go bird watching, goes, wow, there's a nuthatch. Let's find the next. They don't do that. It's just ordinary. It's just being what it is. Just being what it is. And you can't even see it. And he couldn't even see it. He looked up at way up there someplace. He doesn't know. He doesn't know. And he hears its piercing cry, piercing cry, piercing all the way through any idea of heart mind or no heart mind or this or that or dividedness or undivided, piercing through to what? Just piercing. Single, clear, flat, nut hatch call down from the tree trunks up through time. From the very beginningless beginning, whatever that is. At five lakes, basins, biggest little lake, after all day scrambling on the peaks, a naked bug with a white body and brown hair dives into the water. Dives into the water. Nothing more than a naked bug. We're nothing more than naked bugs. No name, no gender, no personality. Diving into the water. When that frog jumps into the pond, he's not a frog. Right? He's not a frog either. White skin. Skin of innocence. Skin that's going to get burned by the sun up there. Gary, I hope you put a lot of sunscreen on. You're German. You've got light skin. You're Scandinavian. What are you doing up there? Innocent. He's going to get burned. You'll get burned if you jump in. That's the miracle of getting burned, isn't it? Dives in the water, splash. Completely drenching himself in the activity. Whatever the activity is. And that's salvation in Zen. There isn't anything else. But who's saved? I don't know. Who cares? Ridiculous question from a Zen point of view. Who was there to save in the first place? But it's salvation. That's why it's a miracle. The first splash of the day. So that's my song for this morning. It's my story for this morning. With the help of some of my friends here, known and unknown. Questions, comments? I would be glad to take questions or hear comments from any of you.
Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to say that? Is it that it seems to me you said salvation for the use that word? In reference to the poem at the end. And I thought, where's the salvation? I realized that diving into the water was salvation for Pragiri at that time, and for many. Diving into the water for the frog is salvation from dividedness. Would you?
Yes. Yes, that's right. I think we can say that, but let's not. I just sort of threw that term in. That term is used all over the place. So, is there salvation in Zen? If there's salvation in Zen, it's in giving ourselves to this, whatever this is. Just giving ourselves to it, and not just giving ourselves by jumping into the water, but then expressing something, planting those. That rise, planning that rise. So it's not just the jumping. And that's why the two poems are complementary to me, the two Basho poems, because the one of the poems is about the frog jumping into the water. The other poem is about planting in the innermost part of the country, planting rice, planting something that will nurture people, that will support them, that will enable them to thrive and return to their own interconnectedness. So I think that's all salvation, but I hate those words because they're so loaded, you know?
Yeah, well, I was a little surprised to hear.
Oh, well, I don't know.
But I thought...
Well, everybody else throws these terms. Even Buddhists use these terms, so I thought, well, if there is salvation in Zen, that's what it is. It's this breath. It's really being with this breath. And then sharing it with you. And then sharing it with you. Not just being with it myself, but sharing it with you. Creating planting a little rice plant together.
Earlier in the talk, you talked about the poem was, reading was Half in Shade.
Yeah.
This particular
tree. Yeah, that's right.
And I need a little help with that.
Half in shade. Well, half in shade. Yeah, well, I need help with that too. You know,
Divided.
Yeah. We're divided within our undividedness. We are divided beings. We are always half in shade. Within undividedness, we're divided. I'm half in shade right now because my health is only half of what it was 3 weeks ago. I'm half in shade. And I'll be half in shade again. And so will you be. And I'm half in shade because I can never really explain this stuff. I can only talk about what I've experienced, but who is this I anyway? It's just a story. It's always half in shade.
But half in shade, of course, implies half in light.
Well, that's right. Half in shade implies enlightenment. Dogen said, when one side is dark, that's all you need. The other side is completely light. So you completely go into the darkness, into the shade. That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. I see a connection between the salvation and the shade, though.
Okay. Okay.
And that is giving a note. And when
the
quiet flash, you have to invite the unknown, willing as you're about to comparison.
Yep.
That's right. It's just that you can be with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so that's what I see the shade.
And yep. That's right. That's right. Good. Thank you. Ben.
Tim, your song made a song come.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So I'll sing you a little song. Watching fireflies in the hills above Hokyoji, each sings a separate silent song, a rhythm of light and dark like none other. Who's to say these blinking lights are other than this infinite night?
Thank you. Thank you. Yep.
I was thinking of the salvation part, and I kept thinking about this idea of taking refuge.
People
take refuge in sick.
You
take refuge in the Sangha, or the
Yogi. Yep.
You take refuge in the Dharma.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So those mm-hmm.
treasures
are the same in all traditions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Whether it's your God or your internally. But yeah, if you're just taking refuge in your eye and not in a sangha or a group, then in fact, I thought that was one example of when you have shape.
Good.
At least take refuge in the eye and the we, or else the eye and the it. the hermits, you know, the theologians say that no man, no person by themselves can stay on a path without either the sangha, the community, or the lead, or the it, or the teaching. So some of these hermits, you know, they may not have seen people or know their own people much, but these people totally were taking refuge also in the teaching, the it that kept them.
Good. Good.